Hey everyone, I know you've heard me speak about microdosing and how much I love it. And I'm talking about microdosing THC. I love it. And that's why I love our sponsor, microdose.com. Microdose gummies are incredible. They deliver perfect entry-level doses of THC that help you feel just the right amount of good. And when I mean just the right amount of good, I mean in so many situations. Anxiety, sleep, focus, pain, relaxation. There are so many different strains and they're really helpful. And I have recommended microdose.com to so many people. And you know what they say to me? Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Don't be afraid of microdosing. Go to microdose.com and you'll learn all about microdosing THC. These gummies feel amazing. They taste amazing. I have used them to get me into the zone I need to write. I've used them at night after a stressful day or a stressful show to relax. I have also said to family members, please take a gummy right now. And they've said, oh, good idea. So check it out. Check it out because they're fantastic. And I'm not like a big weed person. I mean, I used to be. And I do enjoy weed every now and then. But I love these gummies. And I take them with me everywhere. So check it out. Don't be afraid. They're all natural. They're fantastic. And you deserve it. So what are you going to do? You're going to do something that is fantastic. You're going to get 30% off your first order. 30% off. That's a lot. Plus free shipping today at microdose.com. Use promo code JUDYGOLD, JUDYGOLD. It's available nationwide. They deliver it to your door. That is microdose.com. Promo code JUDYGOLD for 30% off and free shipping. Do it. Go to microdose.com. Promo code JUDYGOLD. You deserve it. You deserve it. And you know what else? You're welcome.
Tropfen uns den Regen auf mein Kopf. Pink wie ein Deckerbus, ist die kleine Fahrt im Topf. Geht mir kein Sach mit, die.
And welcome to Kill Me Now with Judy Gold. I am your host, Judy Gold, and this week we have part two of my interview with the one and only Dee Snider, who, you know, Twisted Sister, what a life he has had. I hope you enjoyed part one, because I loved talking to him. I couldn't wait to air this episode. And then, of course, I text him, and I'm like, oh, you know, we're airing the episode this week, and he's on vacation. So there you go. Because that's the story of my life. I mean, it's a wonderful, wonderful story, his story. And, you know, it's uplifting and it gives you hope and determination. I want you to enjoy that. I am actually, you are here. You know, this episode is posting as I leave for Sweden. I'm going to Sweden. I'm going to Sweden to the Gothenburg Book Fair. For my book, yes, I can say that when it comes to when they come for the comedians, we're all in trouble. But of course, you know, there are going to be all these amazing authors there. So I'm going to feel like so like imposter syndrome, like, oh, you wrote this book about that. And I'm just writing about free speech. But anyway, it should be fun. Elisa is not going with me. So that's not good because I get very uptight around not being able to communicate with people. But, you know, it's an adventure. And then guess what? I get to talk about the adventure on next week's rant. So I'm coming from Sweden. I'm going to have a lot to say. So as you're listening to this, I am being frustrated because I don't speak Swedish, but I will have Swedish meatballs for you and those little Swedish fruit things. Okay. So anyway, sit back, relax, please enjoy part one and FYI, I mean part two. Sorry, I meant part two. I'm losing my mind. Just so you know, when I get back, I'll be going to P-Town for Women's Week, October 9th through the 14th. Then on the 15th, I'm in Stamford, Connecticut for the Israel Cancer Research Fund Gala. I got a lot going on. Then on October 21st, I am in Fort Lauderdale at the Sunshine Cathedral. And on the 28th, if you're in any of these places, Pottstown, Pennsylvania, I'm going to be at Soul Joel's inside Sunnybrook. So that's on the 28th. So Pennsylvania on the 28th, Fort Lauderdale on the 21st, Stamford, Connecticut on the 15th, Provincetown, Massachusetts, the week of the 9th. And then, baby, oh, and the week before that, this week, I am in Sweden. So sit speeding. So sit the back, relax, and enjoy part two of my interview with the one and only Dee Snider. Okay, so you have more children, and then you go bankrupt.
Yeah.
I mean,
Twice.
And yeah. You cannot feed your kids. You are riding a bike to work and hiding your face so that people aren't like, wait, aren't you? I mean, because you're very recognizable.
You can't hide his face.
Yeah.
You can't hide his face. I mean, I've been skiing with only this sticking out with a mask on and a helmet. And people are like, yo, D, what the hell? What's sticking out? Is my nose showing? And there's the nose is showing too. So it's more like that, which is a giveaway. I would say I'm the Jay Leno of heavy metal. But I lose everything by 1990. Now, mind you, the band broke in 84, 85. 5 years later,
it's all gone.
I'm gone, and we're living in a rented house, and I get a job answering phones at a desk job it was getting $200 a week cash. Remember, that was like in the pocket. And I only had one car. So instead of the car, so I'm riding a bicycle to work, bringing a bag lunch. And people are walking in the office and going, my hair's pulled back and stuff, but this is showing. Right. And they're going, aren't you Dee Snider? And I'm lying because I'm so embarrassed and humiliated. And I go, no. Well, no, I just look like him. They go, wow, it's uncanny.
Yeah.
It's uncanny, man. And I go, yeah, right. If only, because people couldn't imagine that you could have millions and blow it all. And I wasn't high. I wasn't drunk. It wasn't embezzled. It wasn't any of that stuff. I just was living like a rock star. And when the bottom falls out, you don't want to believe it's over. So that same ego that drove you to stick with it, you keep saying, you start borrowing, advancing against future royalties, going, the next album, the next tour is going to fix it. And when it doesn't, one day people stop loaning you money. And I had a year where I had $0 income. $0 income. And I had three kids.
Do you, you know, you talk about putting these flyers on these cars for Suzette to do hair and makeup and
Well, this is again, Suzette, you know, I never for a minute thought she would leave me. And when I had nothing, she was there through it all. When I had everything, she was there in spite of it. She sometimes says that was the worst time, those 80s, when I suddenly became like this monster. And when I lost everything, I didn't think she was going to leave me. She went and worked in a salon. I stayed with the kids. And on weekends, for $100, she was doing weddings, hair and makeup at weddings. But I would go out to these wedding, what do they call them, where you go to a hall, you pick the caterers for the wedding. I forget what they call them. Fairs. And I would fly her car windows, you know, with Suzette's information so that she could get work. I'm whoring out my wife. And you're referencing my opening my
of
book.
Of the frats, yeah.
I'm being chased through, well, not frats. I'm
the other
referencing.
Book. I've read too much in too short of a period of time.
That's my memoir, Shut Up and Give Me the Mic. I get chased through a parking lot at a wedding hall by security. And I'm running not because I'm afraid I'm going to go to a wedding hall, jail. I'm afraid they're going to recognize me and say, what are you doing flying cars in a parking lot? Another guy flying says, man, you're really fast. You want a job? But I'm being fast because I just want to get out of there before people know.
That's right. I read. Yeah. Do you?
You know, this is humbling. Humbling is good for a man. I'll tell you that.
I wanted to ask you, you know, what that felt like. Like, I look at people, you know, like Joan Rivers, who lost everything. Her husband died. She was persona non grata. She couldn't get a fucking job. Like, what did it feel like to be this father, this icon? How did you wake up in the morning and continue? I mean, did you know it's going to work out? Or was it just like, I am responsible for these other people and I got to stop thinking about myself?
Well, I was living a very much a double life.
Right.
Because to what was left, now mine is the 90s. This is the grunge era. Mm-hmm. So add on top of that.
You know,
I got the one day I come in as a memo. We're not doing what you do anymore.
Yeah, like they did with disco.
Now we're not singing like you. We're not looking like you. We're not writing songs like you. We're not performing like you. We're not dressing like you. There's nothing you do that we're interested in. They would talk about bottoming out and being second, you know, and being broke and riding. That's riding that bicycle. But I'm still trying to stay connected to music. I'm going to events and, you know, the hair's out and, you know, I'm still trying to, not let people know the truth. You know, I was doing, Howard Stern was always a great friend and I'm still doing his show and he's doesn't know that by day I'm answering phones in an office. And, you know, but I'm still coming on a show and acting like he's, because to him, to the world, whether my music was on the radio or not, I was still a rock star. And his assumption that, you know, once you've achieved it, you're set for life.
Right.
Which is not the truth of it, not for most of us. The Ozzy Eltons, Eric Claptons, Stevie Nixes of the world are the 0.00001 percenters who have a lifetime career. Most of us get a few years. And then, you know, and you're left to going and playing bars, you know, doing your classic rock for the rest of your life.
So
it was really tough.
Have you ever gone back and listened to those radio interviews?
No, not that I'm for any reason that I wouldn't.
Right. No, I just was wondering. I mean,
I hear people, because it's on the Best of Stern. They play all of them. People always be coming back. There was a time where I'd be on 3 days a week.
Yeah.
I would go to Howard's house in the morning and we'd drive with his limo and then I'd go there and do the show and then ride back with him. And I was gone so regularly. I was almost a member of the crew for a while.
Yeah, I remember.
And so there's a lot of people constantly saying, you know, you guys were so good together.
And also, here are these two guys who everyone thinks are just like these radicals and they're just family guys. They're just, you know.
That was our bond. Right. He grew up in Roosevelt. Right. I grew up in Baldwin. He was a year older than me. He was married to Allison, had Emily.
Right.
I was married to Suzette, had Jesse. And then he proceeded. And for the years we were hanging together, we were very similar.
Right.
Wild by day, I'm wild by night, he's wild by day. But we go home and we were family guys. And so we had a great relationship. And then we proceeded to have more children. He had two more girls. I had two more boys. He stopped allowing my boys to be around his girls because they were growing up, and Emily and Jesse were kind of, how you doing?
Yeah.
You know, like, but then what happened? People say, what happened to you guys? He got divorced.
Yeah.
And became divorced guy. And I was still married guy. As divorced guy, he was hanging out and he started partying again. And God bless him. And he wound up going out with a model and marrying a model. I remember one time we hung out together and Suzette said she felt like she was cheating on Allison.
Oh,
it's that weird thing about divorces, like who gets who in the divorce. And she became really good friends with Allison, his wife. And it felt weird. So, Howard's life went in another direction and I stayed the same dude.
So you write a song, a Christmas song for your wife, called The Magic of Christmas Day. God bless us all.
Yeah. Yes.
And you get a phone call that Celine Dion wants to record this song.
Right. And you just got to point out to people, Suzette asked me to write her a Christmas song. I wrote her one, a heavy metal guy writing a Christmas song.
It's such a beautiful song.
It wasn't for commercial use. Right. It was like a gift for her. But years, a few years later, now I'm in the basement. I'm literally, I got the call. I was in the basement. I had a folding table with my desk and I'm writing screenplays. I'm trying to figure out a new, some way escape out of this hell I'm in. I get the call that they played the song for Celine Dion and she wants to put it on her holiday record, her Christmas album.
And that gets you out of debt.
Well, we call the house St. Celine built. and don't ever speak ill of Celine. As a matter of fact, so the first thing I said when they told me, Celine wants to record your wife's Christmas song. I said, does she know who wrote it?
Yeah.
And I said, we didn't tell her yet. I said, well, do not tell her Satan wrote a Christmas song. I was like, I was so fearful that she would go, I've got to distance myself, you know, from that guy because she was so, you know, whatever she was. And so that record that is on is called These Are Special Times. It's the biggest selling holiday time in
history. Unbelievable.
Sold 14 million copies.
Have you ever spoken to her about it?
No.
I
don't know if she knows. Still don't know if she knows. I was in Canada and I got a diamond award for, you know, 10 times platinum.
Right.
I mean, in Canada, they like issue a copy of that record at birth. So, you know, yeah, that was one of those turnaround moments, pull us out of the darkness. Along with things like doing voiceover work. I mean, I did voiceover work and that was a godsend. I was the voice of MSNBC for a while. And I remember they had to break the news to MSNBC that Dee Snider was the voice they picked because they auditioned over tapes and then they picked my voice and they were going, yeah, just one thing in full disclosure, your voice of your network is the guy from Twisted Sister. You know, but hey, tonight at 8 on MSNBC. Yeah. In the Line of Fire with Ashley Banfield. and that paid the bills. It's great.
I love that story. Hey, everyone. Did you know that Fast Growing Trees is the biggest online nursery in the United States with more than 10,000 different kinds of plants and over 2 million happy customers in the United States? And I'm one of them. You're listening to one of them. Fast Growing Trees has everything you could possibly want, like fruit trees, palm trees, evergreens, house plants, and so much more. Whatever you're interested in, they have it for you. Find the perfect fit for your climate and your space. Fast Growing Trees makes it easy to order online and your plants are shipped directly to your door in 1 to 2 days. And along with their 30-day Alive and Thrive guarantee, they offer free plant consultation forever. Forever. I just want you to know that I just got off a plane and I walked in my apartment. What was the first thing I did? Is I came in and said hi to Avi, my fig tree. I'm telling you, and I have Yael, which is another plant, but Fast Growing Trees has changed my atmosphere here in my apartment. You don't need a lot of space, but they do have, you know, they have stuff for outdoor spaces. But I live in an apartment, and I'm telling you, Avi and Yael, yes, they're both Jewish names, Hebrew. The space looks so much better. And I just had a conversation with Avi. Like, I was like, I missed you. I love having living things here. It's very, very, I don't know. It's made this more of a home. It's the best. And Elisa has some too. And she loves them. And she talks to them too. But she got that from me. Anyway, check out Fast Growing Trees. You need to be around plant life. This spring, they have the best deals online, up to half off on select plants and other deals. And listeners to our show get an additional 15% off their first purchase when using the code JUDYGOLD, J-U-D-Y-G-O-L-D, at checkout. That's an additional 15% off at fastgrowingtrees.com using the code JUDYGOLD at checkout. Fastgrowingtrees.com, code JUDYGOLD. Offer is valid for a limited time. Terms and conditions may apply. You're welcome. Okay, I really want to talk about free speech, which is, you know, I live for free speech. You are a free speech advocate. Your description in front of the Senate when you talk about lyrics that they, you know, they had taken all your lyrics out of context and put them in, you know, different order. And the idea of interpretation, which I say a lot, look, you can be offended by a joke, but that doesn't mean that that was the intent of the comedian. The comedian is telling this joke, and if you're taking their intent out and you decide, okay, this one word bothers me, so I'm not going to listen to the whole thing because now I'm triggered, then you're the asshole. You're losing out.
Or with comedy, the selectiveness of what offends you.
Right.
Again, going back to Howard, hit the bell. He had somebody call in one time, and they were like, Howard, Long Island, New Jersey people. Howard, I love your show. I listen every day. I love everything. But today, you talked about autism, and that crossed the line. And Howard said this, and he said, let me understand this. You listen every day. Yes, I do. And you laugh at all. I make fun of everybody. And you laugh and you laugh. Until today, I made fun of somebody that was personal to you and bothered you. He said, no. He said, stop listening to my show. He said, I could respect you more if at least you said, I don't like anything you do.
Right.
But to say that you would listen to everything and selectively pick certain things out that bother you, you're an asshole.
Right.
And I said, and that's how people are with comedy. They're laughing, and then they're laughing at everybody else's joke, everybody else's expense. But all of a sudden, it's like, oh wait a minute,
yeah,
you're saying something that's personal to me now. No, it's either all funny or none of
it's
funny.
And it's like it doesn't happen in music. It's like you don't go to a concert and you're a fan of the band, and then they decide to do some new songs at the concert and you don't like the songs. You don't say that band should never perform again, you know?
No, but I would like to say that we see you going to the people out there. I'm talking to the audience. We see you leaving to go to the bathroom.
Yeah.
I say it's like Pavlovian. These words, I said, if you've got a problem going to urinating, these words will set you free. This is one off the new album. Good God, you get seatbelt.
That's hilarious.
Everybody suddenly, I'm going to get a beer while I'm out there. We see you streaming out of the room. I remember seeing Led Zeppelin play Kashmir at Madison Square Garden, probably their biggest song of all time, but the album hadn't been released yet. They went into Kashmir. Half the audience got up and left to go to the bathroom
ridiculous.
While they were playing this because they didn't know the song and it just sounded like a big
mishmash.
This
is why Billy Joel sells out stadium after stadium after stadium, because it's just his greatest hits.
Yeah, no new songs.
But
I saw Elton John saying he was going to play new material and do tour, and he was worried. And they said and Paul McCartney says he sees people's eyes glass over the minute you do something from the new album. It's like all of a sudden people are like So we get
we're doing the work in front of you, and you're fucking turning on us. It's like no, we haven't.
Oh, you're the bold. By the way, I'm friends with a lot of comedians. No more. It's the most dangerous job in the world. I have the most respect for comedians. I've been friends with so many. You guys are just there with, a dick in your hand, basically.
Pretty much.
There's no wall of sound protecting you. It's no band, five guys up on the stage. Right. It's just, so much respect for what you do. It's the most dangerous thing in the world.
I love it. Billy Joel said, being rich and famous is tough. Being poor and famous must really suck. Okay. Thank you for that, Billy.
Well, we were talking about the Bernard, what's his name? The subway.
Oh, Bernard Goetz.
Goetz. And how he became like tabloid fodder. And he was haunted. He was in the news and he was saying that he was famous.
Right.
But he was just like, was he a post office worker or something? It stabbed somebody with a screwdriver whose kids were picking on him. And he said, that's what he said. He said, man, being rich and famous is tough. Right. Being poor and famous, but suck. Yeah. You got no limo to jump into. You got no bodyguard to ward off people, you know?
Okay. You recently got, I don't know how, I'm a member of the LGBTQ plus community, and I'm a fan of yours. And I loved how you handled, so you agreed with someone on Twitter regarding gender,
children deciding gender orientation at single digits in elementary school, and that blew up my face. I was on vacation in the morning. I said, "Yeah, I agree with that." And I came back in the evening. I was like, "Whoa, what happened?" You know, you get on the phone. The Gay Pride Parade wants to talk to you. You know, I was supposed to be the grand marshal for the Gay Pride Parade, and they were upset that I agreed with that particular bit of information. You know,
there's no nuance on Twitter. You know, there's no nuance when it comes to posting anything on social media. And if they looked at your background and what you have stood for, and the fact that, okay, this is an opinion I have, but I stand with you. It's this idea of cutting people's heads off. You know, I always say, you know, free speech, it's the left and the right that abuse our First Amendment. But the left, with this constant being offended by proxy, just, you know, being crybaby. Come on, people. You know, there, it's again that idea of interpreting things one way, and that's the only way, but it's not the only way. And you never get the right to
very
explain.
True. And also looking at the whole picture and not hyperanalyzing one little spot without looking at the entire situation.
Right.
So there was, it was an attempt to cancel me.
Right.
Didn't work out well because I pushed back with an open letter on my Facebook page, which got as much coverage as the attempted cancellation.
And you spoke to them personally, too.
Yes. And I said, really? I was a grand marshal of the...
Right.
I said, I've stood with you guys shoulder to shoulder. I've represented, I've championed you, and I disagreed with one thing.
One time, yeah.
And I'm dead to
right.
you now. I said, you know, and I said, this is not a good look.
Right. It's not
this
good
is not a good
at
look.
All. Yeah.
You need support from a wider group of people than just your core
right.
group. You need people who are a little more moderate, but still believe you in your rights
right.
and stand with you and sing
humanity,
with you.
And humanity, yeah.
And I said, you know, we can't be so just reject people because they don't see exactly eye to eye. I say, who? Name a person. Well, actually, it looks like you and me agree eye to eye. It's very
right.
unusual that you could say, I agree with every single person, every single thing this person stands
right.
for. That's very unusual.
Right.
If you can count that 90%, all right, pretty good. We can have
right.
it, you know. But, you know, just the idea that one
and
thing.
And they cut you off.
Good.
You're
yeah,
cut
yeah.
off. You, I want to talk to you about banning drag. You essentially were doing drag for years. And before, you know, this has become such a lightning rod. Why do you think they're picking on fucking drag queens?
Look, if you go to in the earliest days of Twisted Sister, we, before Suzette, we were wearing women's
right.
clothing. We'd go to a women's shop and get something. And of course, it was very funny because we're looking to get a reaction and we were getting it. But it was very visceral and it was very homophobic.
Yes.
And it was very like if people were picking fights with me because I was a fag.
Right.
You know, and you know, it was triggering to people. I know clearly we have not come that far. What we've seen with the Trump since Trump came into office of people slithering out from under rocks.
Right.
What's going on in Florida right now? You know, some of the trades learned during slavery.
Oh my God.
Were beneficial. I mean, that this is even coming out of people's mouths shows that we have not come. We thought we had a black president. Whoa,
yeah, I did. I totally thought. Yeah, same thing.
No. So anyway, it's still there. This homophobia is great, and they get shut down and pushed back because the most of us do not stand with those people.
Right.
And we're pushing them back, but they're getting a chance to open their big fat mouths, and they're as homophobic as ever and as threatened as ever.
Right. And it's because they're dumb. I'm sorry, but they're dumb.
Well, because they're feeling, you know, we go to frats, and I talk
yeah.
about that, and there's a lot of homoerotic hazing.
Right.
There's a lot of homoerotic behavior in hazing. A lot of beatings and dressing the guys up as women and a lot of this weird, you know, you see in a lot of sports, there's a lot of homoerotic
right.
behavior going on out there in the world. And I think guys feel very,
threatened.
They feel uncomfortable with their own feelings. And what they do is they lash out
right.
violently at homosexuals to prove that they're masculine and that they're not, you know, they have no homosexual tendencies. You know, me, my wife always says, you got a lot of woman in you. The two of us, she's got a lot of dude in her and I got a lot of woman, you know, and we sort of, you know, but that's a healthier way to be, by the
you
way.
You know,
be in touch with your feminine side.
Yeah,
guys.
I agree. I mean, it is such a good time for this book, Frats, because I mean, it deals with toxic masculinity, the pressures of being male in today's society. You know, I feel like, and I'm, you know, I have two sons and they're straight and, you know, grew up with moms. And they're very self-assured in their masculinity. They grew up around so many different kinds of people. But this, the pressure now, I talk to a lot of, you know, other parents, and they say that boys are in a really bad situation now. And this book is just the perfect, Frats. It really speaks to you're really on the pulse all the fucking time.
But, you know, this is a sad thing about that, Judy, is this is set in the 70s when I was growing up, but it's still going on. Do you see what's going on in Michigan, that hazing thing, one of the colleges? Yeah. Insane hazing. And the guy said he was being dry humped by another man as part of his hazing ritual. You know, I mean, like, it's so sad that we think we've come so far, yet there's a lot, so much work to do. And just in fairness to coming so far, yes, a couple hundred years ago, we were slaughtering each other in the fields. So we have made improvements, but man, it seems incremental.
The thing about the fact that this takes place in the 70s, and it just reminds me of the fact that you get on Twitter now or whatever, Instagram, whatever, and you know the issues of today. There's so many videos of George Carlin and Richard Pryor that speak to exactly what's going on now. Like when George Floyd was murdered, the number 7 download on Spotify that week was a Richard Pryor bit about the cops. I mean, we have not changed. In fact, we've gotten worse because now we have these platforms and everyone has a fucking soapbox. So, you know, this is a cautionary tale right here, Frats.
Yeah, it is. And for those reading it, so, you know, it's about these high school fraternities or gangs.
Yeah.
I was not in a high school fraternity. If you read the book, I am one of the Bretts. I was one of the outcast guys sitting in the lunchroom observing and trying not to get my ass kicked by the fraternities.
Right.
But I was a great observer, and it was a unique moment in time, and it was a story that I felt that I needed to share. And you know, people, like I said, well, it's the 70s. No, this hate stuff is still going on. The stupidity and you know the macho bravado and chest pumping. And you think it's all gone? No, it's not. It's closeted.
Right.
It's more closeted in many ways, but it's still going on.
And it's people stop feeling threatened. Just be who you fuck you are. Hey everyone, you know what I just did? I tore, I poured, and I enjoyed a packet of Liquid IV because I love Liquid IV. Liquid IV is a major part of my life. And I just worked out with my trainer and I had a delicious lemon ginger Liquid IV. That one has a little extra. That has a little green tea in it, and so that's a little caffeinated. So I enjoy that because I needed it today. And, you know, it's getting warmer out, and what does that mean? Summer. Oh, God, please come. It can't come soon enough. And that means you have to hydrate. And that's what Liquid IV does. It hydrates you with benefits like electrolytes, vitamins, and clinically tested nutrients. And it has 3 times the electrolytes of the leading sports drink, plus 8 vitamins and nutrients in one little stick. And that's why Liquid IV is the number one powered hydration brand in America. Okay? And I love it. I use it every day. Ben's basketball team uses it. It is a science-backed formula that works. It keeps you hydrated. And they have sugar-free. They have sugar-free packets in white peach, green grape, raspberry melon, and lemon lime. Okay? I didn't do the sugar-free. Okay. But Elisa does the sugar-free. So what are you going to do? You're going to stay hydrated because it's very, very important. And Liquid IV has been a longtime sponsor, and I love them. And they are a quality product. And this is what you're going to do. You're going to turn your ordinary water into extraordinary hydration with Liquid IV. Get 20% off your first order of Liquid IV when you go to liquidiv.com and use code JUDYGOLD at checkout. That's JUDYGOLD. That's 20% off your first order when you shop Better Hydration today using promo code JUDYGOLD, JUDYGOLD, can't even say my name, at liquidiv.com. Got it? You're welcome. I want to know, when is the graphic novel coming out and what's the name of it?
So the graphic novel is called He's Not Going to Take It. It's on Z2 Comics. It was supposed to come out this month. I was supposed to be at Comic-Con, but it got delayed. It's coming out next month.
Oh my God, you're killing it.
Yeah. I'm always doing new things, you know. But Z2, they do Beethoven.
Right.
Melissa Etheridge.
Yes, yes.
They do they take an adult turn on these subjects in a graphic novel comic book form, which is great. It's about 102 pages. But it was eye-opening for me because I never connected the dots of how I became that. As those lines came together and that moment in time, how I became that voice at that time.
Right.
And I was there to stand up at that time. And the answer is people kept telling me to shut up.
Right.
My whole life, from my dad, from everybody, it was sort of like, know your place, shut up, stay in your lane, and finally just got tired of shutting up. And rock and roll gave me that microphone. Finally, it was in my hands, and I could yell louder than everybody else in the room and get everybody's attention, and I haven't shut up since.
And thank God for that. You're such an inspiration, and I believe in reinventing yourself. I believe in this career, you cannot, as you said, rest on your laurels unless you're Billy Joel. And, you know, you have to reinvent yourself all the time. And your writing is fantastic. Your music is fantastic. I think you're awesome. I really am I'm so proud that
acting's getting better too. I've been acting. I was actually supposed to do a movie with Adam Sandler and Ben Affleck, but it's been pushed back because of a strike. I'm directing a movie, my first movie. And I'm not doing this to say, look what I'm doing.
Because you couldn't live with yourself.
You could do things too. Stop thinking about saying, oh, I'm going to write a book one day. I'm going to write a screenplay one day. I'm going to do this. I'm going to do that. Stop saying I'm going to and just start doing it. The feeling, and just know this, all they come out of it is a pile of pages on a desktop that say, and you're going to look at it though, and you're going to feel so good that instead of just saying you're going to do it, you actually did it. And I've had a play.
You were on Broadway.
Musical I wrote, produced. Yeah. I've been on Broadway. I've had screenplays, but I've got a lot of other ones stacked up that didn't get sold, but I still had to write them. I wanted to write them, and I'm proud that I did it. I wrote it. It matters to me, at least.
You recently made a statement about streaming music and how negatively it has affected the incomes of musicians. Do you think we're up for another strike here? Because, you know, it's really getting ridiculous, this income inequality.
They should, but the music community should strike. But it's not, you got the musicians in the band are musicians union, and the singers are not in the musicians union. We're Screen Actors Guild, we're AFTRA, SAG-AFTRA now. They've never been a strike of bands.
Right.
They've never stood up.
Same with comedians,
back. Yeah. So I don't think we're organized enough, centralized enough, like the actors are, to pull it off. But if you know, there was in my Twitter feed, I posted or reposted, I should say, Vernon Reed of Living Color, amazing guitar player and band. He posted a breakdown of what actually the different outlets like Spotify, YouTube, they're paying, and people don't see those things. And for people, Andre, I never saw it. I just know I get shit.
Right.
But I'm looking at it and going, oh my God. And when you put it into, all right, a million streams on YouTube, and we all go to YouTube, is $970.
It's fucking crazy. My residuals are shit. I got one for one penny. I just received one for 1 cent from Madam Secretary on CBS. And you're telling me the head of CBS isn't a billionaire. You know, one cent.
Yeah. I've got a few of those checks myself. They're hysterical. You put them, you don't even
bother. Yeah, you want to just take a picture of them and frame
them. I'm hoping that one penny drives them crazy.
It costs more to mail the fucking check. I asked my podcast guests two questions before I end this wonderful. I could talk to you all day. Number one.
Well, yes, I mean, before you do, let me just say thank you for reading. Thank you for researching. Thank you for taking the time. I mean, you know, most of the time it's whatever.
I get it. That's why I do the podcast.
People go that far. You went above and beyond, and I thank you for your kind words.
Thank you.
While I was singing my accolades, I was getting chills. I was going, that's really nice.
That's why I do this podcast, because I have had so many shitty interviews, and I'm like, don't ask me how I got into comedy and if women have it harder. Like, shut up. Redo your fucking – and I find your – I mean, it was just – it was incredible when I – I can't even. It's just like you're such a complete person with so many dimensions, and I loved it. It was such a journey for me.
Thank you. I appreciate that. So one of the two questions.
I love you for that. Number one, what do you do for your mental health? We're a pro mental health podcast.
What do I do for mental health? Workout.
Yeah, same.
Exercise.
Yeah.
I remember there was a time where I stopped for some reason. It was in the late 80s, whatever reason it was. I stopped and I started getting these migraine headaches. I never had migraine headaches. And it was coming out of the neck and it was this pain. And anyway, long story short, when I went to the doctors and it was like, what changed? I stopped exercising. And by the way, people, it doesn't have to be over the top. You know, like you don't want to be a gym rat.
Right.
You know, the gym rat, just some
get out.
Big exercise. You know, get out, get some sun,
and
whatever.
Move.
Yeah. And move. So that's really what I do.
Also, you're very creative. So I think that the fact that you practice writing and you do all this shit to because you don't want to put out a shitty product is admirable as well.
There's a lot of venting in writing, I think, for sure. You know, writing my memoirs was a lot.
Do you write handwrite or do you computer write?
So one of my things, my father. Oddly, was I think you might want to hit the bell on this. He typed. He was a typist.
Oh, wow.
And when he went to, he has a great story of going over to Korea, and they needed a typist for the to work in the office. And he thought, great, I'm getting off the front line. Only to find out that the typist was the assistant machine gunner, the most dangerous job. So he suddenly forgot how to type. But he said it'll come in handy for you. So I took typing classes. And a matter of fact, came in handy. I used to type my girlfriend Suzette's her term papers for school. But anyway, yeah. So I'm just.
Isn't it
I'm
funny
so
when
fast.
You watch these kids and they didn't take typing class and they're just typing with one finger?
Frantically,
QWERASDFJK. I mean, like it's a good skill to have.
To not look at the so my handwriting has become worse and worse and worse because I'm just good on the keyboard.
Okay. That's number one. Number two, I call the podcast Kill Me Now because everything gets on my fucking nerves. So what pisses you off? It could be anything. What fucking makes you so angry? And it could be like the most minute thing in the entire world, but what makes you crazy?
I always go with the first thing that flashes in my head. And there are a number of things. People who aren't handicapped, who park in handicapped.
Oh, fuck that shit. I hate that.
I curse them. I see them pull up in their Corvette and get out and just, you know.
Yeah, they act like they're
Johnny Bravo. Go, and I go, may you get an illness. I if there's a God in heaven, you will need that parking spot one day for real.
And I hope someone's in it.
I'm horrible. You die an awful death. I've got no mercy.
I love
that. Because my mom and my dad, and they went and so many people who need those spots.
You really, fucking selfish prick.
Yeah.
You know, I once said something about that, because you know when you get on a flight and they're like, anyone who needs extra help, and there's people who you're like, all right.
Are sprinting yeah. to the gig.
And they're like, I got so much shit that there are handicaps that you can't see and disorders that you can't. And I'm like, look, I get it. But if you can run on the fucking plane, you can wait in line for 5 minutes with everyone else.
Yeah.
Whatever.
Those people.
Yeah, now everyone can write to me what a fucking cunt I am. Okay. I just want to say thank you. Please, everyone, get Fratz, but also read Dee's autobiography and the new graphic novel, and check everything out on my, you know, Insta, whatever the social fucking shit. But I can't thank you enough. You're the greatest.
Feelings mutual. Oh. So when you come to, me and my wife always go, where do you work in LA? Cause I'm out in LA.
Oh, I usually work at the Comedy Store, but I haven't been there in a while. But
let me know when you go. My wife and I go there frequently. Okay. We're regular.
I would love that.
We're regular at the Comedy Store, and I would love to come down and catch a set. Comedy is people. It's so important. What you guys do, and I know you guys. My son was a comedian for a while until he got over his depression. Right. Then he stopped doing it because it comes from a dark place. Unfortunately,
it really does.
But you to go out and laugh. And my wife said, "We got to like this started during COVID. We got to and then Trump. You know, got to laugh. You know." And going and watching so many of you guys struggling with the censorship and what you can and can't say. But I love that so many of you are pushing back.
Absolutely.
Whether it's qualified with, hey, fuck you, I'm going to say this.
Right.
You don't like it,
get
out of here now.
Yeah, we're telling the truth.
But you know what? Yeah. This is, we got to push back. So people go out and support comedians. You'll be glad you did, because you'll come back smiling.
Yeah.
Just like going to a rock show.
That's right.
Come out feeling better because you laughed, you sang, you just jumped around, you enjoyed yourself, and you went home. So let me know when you're in town, because we always
come
down to
the
shop.
I would love that. All right. Break a leg with everything. You're the best.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you so much for listening to part 2 of my conversation with the one and only Dee Snider. How great was that? Wasn't that great? It's like, you know, you come from two different worlds, and yet there's so much to talk about, so much in common, and I love him. Oh, I wanted to, of course, say that Kill Me Now is produced by Laura Vogel, edited by Colin Schmeling, marketing, everything, scheduling, everything else done by the one and only Brittany Jo Sowards Richmond. I am currently in Sweden, but I'm back next week. So you can come see me next week on October 5th. I'm doing a sisterhood in Bedford, New York. A sisterhood for Sheree Tefillah, because I'm a Jew. And then I'm off to P-Town, October 9th through the 14th. The 15th, I'm in Stamford at the Israel Cancer Research Fund. And then come see me in Fort Lauderdale on the 28th. And come see me in Pottstown, Pennsylvania on the 28th. Oh, no, I'm in Sunshine Cathedral on the 21st. And on the 28th, Soul Jewels inside Sunnybrook in Pottstown, Pennsylvania. And then, I got stuff going on. And I'm going to be, just to plan ahead, November 11th, the Marcus JCC of Atlanta. And then I'm getting my knee replaced. Yeah. But anyway, you know, I'll be talking about all that next week when I get back. So thank you all so much for listening. Thank you to everyone who came to my show in Arlington and told me they listened to my podcast. That made me so happy. And I was in synagogue for Yom Kippur. And a very, very smart person told me they love my podcast. So that made me feel really good, even though I'm not supposed to be focusing on myself, but whatever. You know what? It's all about me. So anyway, be well. Thank you again so much. Happy, healthy New Year to all the Jews. And as we always say, so long.